There's a lot of emotion and a lot of feelings and a lot of family dynamics that have to be dealt with in the aging journey.
Welcome to Absolute Trust Talk with your host, Kirsten Howe. Absolute Trust Talk brings you tips, tools, advice, and interviews to help you build a reliable knowledge base on estate planning, business, and finance to start preparing for your future today.
Hello, and welcome to Absolute Trust Talk. I'm your host, Kirsten Howe. I'm glad you're here today. My guest, Linda Fedrini-Johnson, is a licensed family therapist and a certified professional care manager. She founded her company, Elder Care Services, in 1989. And at that time, there really wasn't much in the way of geriatric care manager. So her company really kind of pioneered that field. Elder Care Services is one of the largest care management and home care agencies in the Bay Area and actually in the country. They provide a unique blend of services from professional geriatric care management, home care services, counseling, and also family support and community education. And Linda will talk to us in more detail about all of those things. Linda has not only run her company and served our local community, but she has served her profession very, very vigorously and admirably. She was the president of the Aging Life Care Association, which is the new name that the National Association of Professional Geriatric Care Managers now goes by. In 2010, she was their president, and she's still a very active member. I know she's active in mentoring other new geriatric care managers. She's received lots of nominations and awards from this association for her work and for her mentoring in the field of care management. Linda has been very active in her professional organization, which is currently known as the Aging Life Care Association. They used to be called National Association of Professional Geriatric Care Managers. She was their president in 2010 and is still very active in that organization. I know she's received numerous awards and nominations from them due to her leadership and also her mentoring of other professionals who are entering the field of geriatric care management. She has such a wealth of experience and knowledge in this area, and I'm just very delighted to be able to share her with you. So without further ado, I will welcome my guest, Linda Fedrini-Johnson. Welcome, Linda. I'm so glad you're here today to talk to me.
I am very pleased to be here.
Linda, today our conversation is going to be focused largely on geriatric care management, but your company, Elder Care Services, actually does so much more than that. And I want you to at least give our listeners a sense of what all the resources are available through your company.
Okay. Besides doing care management and helping people on the journey, we also do caregiving. We have caregivers that do anywhere from 2 hours to 24 hours. And sometimes we have to call those caregivers personal assistants, secretaries, or personal trainers so that clients will accept them that are resistant to care. And then what I have most passion for is our education. We are known for our education. I educate in the community at least a couple times a month, and so does my staff. My clinical director is a nurse, and so he focuses a lot on medical. We have experts in dementia. I talk a lot about the whole aging journey and aging positively and keeping your brain healthy. So we do lots and lots of classes that can be found on our website, which is eldercareanswers.com. We always do a series of classes about dementia, and they repeat. It's a 3-session series on dementia. The first one talks about the different kinds of dementia. The second one that was just last night talks about the behaviors, and in 2 weeks from now, I talk about caregiver health and keeping that primary caregiver healthy so they can help their family member that has dementia. And that series goes on all year. It just keeps repeating and repeating, and it's like 2 weeks apart. But we have a speaker series. It's the third Friday of every month, and we bring in experts like yourself to talk about whatever it is that families need to know, and maybe the things that families make mistakes in their legal planning. It could be one of our third Friday speakers series. We really believe in empowering families, I guess, through the work that people pay us to do.
Let's just start with something real basic. How did you get started in the long-term care business?
Well, that's a long story. It really goes back to watching my parents struggle with their parents. So both grandma and grandpa and the other grandma were all failing at the same time. I had three younger brothers. I was a young adult out of the house because I got married early and started a family early. And then I went back to school and I knew I wanted to do something to help people like my parents. And I didn't know what it was called.
Oh, okay. People like your parents who are caring for their parents.
Yes.
Got it.
Yes.
And so you went to school and got yourself
a degree, first in social work and then in clinical psychology, because there's a lot of emotion and a lot of feelings and a lot of family dynamics that have to be dealt with in the aging journey.
Okay. And talk about your licensing.
Well, I'm licensed as a family therapist, but what's more important to our talk today is my certification as a geriatric care manager. And that's what a lot of people don't understand. That is a test. You have to have the credentials to take the test, and you have to have the experience before you could take the test.
Oh.
So you have experience, credentials, and then you take the test to certify the knowledge needed to do this work with families.
And that takes us to what we want to talk about today, which is what is a geriatric care manager? And I think that's maybe not the term you use right now, but I'll hear it from you.
Yeah. It is a term we still use, but the National Association, which I'm a past president of, changed the name to the Aging Life Care Association. So a lot of my peers call themselves aging life care professionals. But for me, because I've been doing this for a very long time, 35 years now, geriatric care is good when I use it with other professionals. But when I'm working with an older adult, I use words like I'm your advocate, I'm your navigator. I'll use metaphors for the terminology.
Okay. Yeah, because a lot of people wouldn't know what that means, geriatric care manager, which is why you're here today, by the way, to make sure that the whole rest of the world knows what that means. So this is a certification that you have, and you, I think, have been president of that organization that certifies you as a geriatric care manager.
It's not the certification part is connected to the National Association, but it is a separate body that does the certification, and that's for good measure, like attorneys that, you know, you belong to the bar, but it was the state of California that it licensed you. So
yeah.
They're two separate entities, but with one purpose: to ensure the public that the person they're getting has the knowledge to deliver and orchestrate for their needs.
Describe what it is you do as a geriatric care manager and how that fits together with other people, say care providers.
The care provider might be somebody that we're working with as a care manager, or we might be even supervising them if they're either part of our staff or our family has hired us to do that. There's a little bit of legal loopholes and that you have to make sure you've taken care of if you're private hiring. But as a care manager, we are working for the family and the client, the identified client. It could be the older adult that's hired us themselves. That's happening more now than it did early in my career, and that's probably a longer story, but because people are looking for experts to help them make decisions. So usually somebody is in some sort of crisis. Mother is hoarding. Mother is not taking care of herself. Where do we begin? And a family somehow makes their way to a geriatric care manager, usually by accident, because thank you for doing these kinds of podcasts. More people will know that we are that initial navigator. We are the Sherpa that's going to get you to the top of the mountain. It might be a long trail, but we're going to get you there. We know all the stops. We know you have to get to a company like Absolute Trust. You know, we know that you have to get someplace that's going to get you the legal documents so you can take action for your parent, that you have to find the right care facility and just the right caregivers that are trained. We know we have to connect you to entitlements and what those entitlements are, from VA benefits to maybe it's the Rotary or a local village that are starting up all over the country that help support and keep people in their own homes. So we know all of that. But then again, my goal is to make sure the adult children and the older adults that they're caring for have quality in their life, and to take that stress away from them, that they don't have to be so stressed, that they have this Sherpa that's going to get them from point A to B, and they only need to worry about A to B, and I've helped them look at C, D, E, and F. We have options when things fall apart, because aging is a rugged journey.
Very well put. I see you as just a really tremendous resource. You know everything a family really needs to know and can't possibly know. That's not what they're doing with their lives. They're working, they're taking kids to soccer games, they're doing all the normal things that we do, and all of a sudden they find themselves in this crisis and have no idea what to do next.
Right. Even with the most skilled and well-trained adult children that might be attorneys, doctors, lawyers, Indian chiefs themselves, they don't have the background of the options and how to get mom to accept one of the options. We haven't even talked about resistance yet. So that's really big. And I recently heard a physician speak at a community meeting I was part of leading, and he's telling this horrific story. And I'm going, oh my God, if he only had a care manager, he wouldn't have gone through, it was hell.
Oh.
He got led to places that were really inappropriate for his mother.
Oh.
And he should have not.
Because nobody really, with your expertise, assessed the situation.
No.
Yeah. That's a good illustration of what it is that you do. Are there standard areas of knowledge that care managers need to have in order to be certified?
Yeah, the testing definitely looks at this when we're taking that certification. But we do need to know about not how to write legal documents, but what legal documents families should have.
Okay.
So it's a question that we'll ask. We need to know about all the diseases of aging. We need to have some knowledge of the medications. Not that we prescribe. But when you see that somebody's taking 3 blood pressure medications because of 3 different hospitalizations, we know we're in trouble.
You need to know to ask a question.
Exactly.
About that. Yeah.
So, and we need to know about their resources. I'm constantly helping people make decisions about how much money does mom have? What's her monthly income? Before you choose that lovely assisted living facility that's near your home that costs $8,000 a month, let's go at this practically and let's see if there's so many entitlements that, your father was a vet during World War II. Mom's entitled to $1,700 a month. She is, the daughter says. Yes. Well, that will help. But does she have enough for that?
How long is that going to last?
Yes. Yeah. And then how old is mom? Is mom 92 with multiple health care issues? And my crystal ball says she's probably got about a year, and we could get her on hospice as she gets closer to the end of her life. You can spend that kind of money.
Right.
It's being practical and looking at it with eyes wide open.
Right. And you have the experience to, I don't want to say categorize these situations, but just as you said, I see this woman, I think we'd be okay with a 1-year plan. But another patient or client, because of the many years of experience you have, no, a 1-year plan isn't going to get us there. We got to have a 20-year plan, possibly.
Yes. When you're talking about diagnoses like MS, Alzheimer's disease, Parkinson's, those diagnoses can be 20-year journeys.
Right, right.
And so we have to be more conservative at the beginning of the journey. And then as you get close to end of life, depending on what's left in financial resources, maybe you can give a little bit more luxury to that person.
Yeah. And you have experience with what the local options are for people. And I don't mean just, your options are assisted living, boarding care. You know the exact facilities. You've been in there. You know this one would be fun for somebody like this. This one would not work for somebody like this. You really have boots on the ground knowledge about all these places.
Yeah, and that's, we're in Walnut Creek, but I'm definitely, our expanse goes to Alameda County. We have clients in San Francisco and some in Benicia and Solano County. So it's broader. And then also, if finances are an issue, we have to sometimes look into the Valley of California.
Less expensive.
Mm-hmm.
I see. Okay. I hadn't even thought about that. And you have connections or information. You have the ability even to help with that.
I can help you with a parent in any state in the United States.
Okay. because of your broad network.
And I know these people personally because of my involvement with the organization. It's not just being a member, not being a president, but I've also done a lot of coaching and mentoring of new care managers, lots and lots of teaching at professional conferences.
Okay, that's good to know. Linda, what do families need to be thinking about when it comes to quality of life for an aging parent?
The first thing adult children need to think about, or their extended family, is what is your mom and dad's values? What have been their values? Is their value being someplace where they can have a garden close to their church, close to the golf course? Even if dad can't golf, he can go to the country club and hang out with the guys. What is their value? And to try to keep that in their lives all their lives. My clients that were boaters, I will have caregivers take them to a pier and watch boats come in and out. My clients that were golfers will go to a golf game or tournament or have the caregiver help them do a bucket of balls with their walker. What is it that gave their life meaning and purpose? And to keep that in it, no matter what the deficits are, even if they're in a coma and they like classical music, you're playing classical music.
Keep that on the radio.
Never think they're gone before they're gone.
Right. I think that's really interesting how you responded to that, because I'm guessing that a lot of times the adult children, when they suddenly are faced with having to take care of their parents, their focus is more on the medical. Their focus is on what do they need medically? What do they need to be able to care for themselves, to eat and get to bed and all those kind of basic things? And they may not take into account, well, what is daily life going to be like for them? How happy are they going to be?
Yeah, it's so important. And even when you're focused on the medical, because mom or dad or your family member, I have a lot of people that are caring for auntie and uncle, that older person that you're going to care for, you're focused on that stroke they just had, and you're talking to medical providers, but sometimes you don't have the knowledge to ask the right questions. That's where a care manager, who is your navigator or your Sherpa that's standing behind you or next to you in a case conference, can ask those questions about mom has dementia, but now she broke her hip. Is she going to benefit from that rehab? Or is she going to benefit from that surgery because she's 96 years old? Do we want to do surgery? Is she going to survive surgery? So there's a lot of really serious questions that you need an advocate that knows how to ask those questions with you, by your side. I had an experience just a few days ago with a client of mine that was hospitalized after a fall and is assisted living. And this is his series of falls he's having. And he hit his head and he was admitted, but it was called in the middle of the night. And they didn't call then because the ER, you know, they're too busy and they're not going to talk to me. But 2 hours later, 5:30 in the morning, I called the floor because he was admitted. And the nurse, I'm telling the nurse all of his diagnosis and making sure they had them in their system. And he said, yes. And I said, this man is 92. He might look disheveled because he has a beard, but he is bright. He's brilliant. There is no dementia. And the client, the nurse was saying, well, he seems very confused now and he's trying to get out of bed. So we're going to order a special bed. Special bed is a cage. Oh. It's a net. This man would have gone absolutely crazy in container.
Right.
I would have too. But right. I know about safety in hospitals. People fall.
Sure,
so that's what they wanted to do with him. So the nurse went back after my phone call, reassessed the client, realized he was just frustrated because he was in the hospital once again after another fall, got him up, got him in a wheelchair, asked him the day of the week, the year. He answered everything. He says, I even asked him the president of the United States. And he said to me, do I have to say his name? So the nurse was not laughing. So I'm sure that he was maybe not in the same political party as my client. But nevertheless, he knew the client was really sharp.
Sure.
And he didn't put him in the cage.
Okay.
Which would have happened had I not made that phone call.
If you weren't involved. Yeah.
That's a good example of being right there when something happens.
Right. Of knowing to ask the right question and knowing the client. Because I think that a lot of people would just accept that. Oh, yeah, I understand you have to keep him in bed. I get that. And this is how you do it.
Without questioning it further.
Yeah, without questioning it. Talk to me about the transitions that happen in long-term care that families need to plan for.
The transitions. I think the first transition that families have to plan for, and this, I'm going to assume mom and dad are together. And believe it or not, men are living longer now too. So the beginning of my career, mostly this was about women in aging.
It was all women.
Now I have a lot of guys and they're terrific. And a lot of these guys are caring for their wives. They really need some help. They've never been caregivers of their children. So they either overcare and burn themselves out. So the adult children come to us about dad who's overcaring.
Oh, he's not the ill parent, but he's making himself
ill. But dad could be 90 or 86 or whatever, and he's caring for mom because he loves her and she cared for him. But he has diminished energy or maybe some illnesses that also, but not are affecting usually his mind.
Right.
And that's why they think they can do it and they try to. So I come in with some interventions that dad can accept help. And that means relabeling the caregiver to his personal trainer or a cook.
Okay. Oh.
So that's transition one is usually helping the adult children to help their mom and dad that are over, one of the two is over caring and dads fall in that category.
Okay.
They have a hard time letting go and sharing the care where women do. So the first transition is often a failure to be able to do something that they've always done. Personal hygiene starts failing because they can't get in and out of the shower or they're fearful, but they haven't told their daughter. But the daughter notices the mom's not getting her hair cleaned, she's not changing her clothes, or there's dust in the bathtub and mom says she takes a shower every day. That was my mother-in-law. Actually, there were spider webs in there.
That's a telltale sign.
Nothing's
happening in there.
Used and she looked okay, but she was able to cover for us. So something happens along that continuum that the adult child says we need to look at. And I guess the more serious one is the dementias, because about 50% of the population over the age of 85 has some sort of dementia. So that's a huge population, because it's a growing population. So there's a lot of cover up from the parent, but the children are getting the message and they see that an intervention needs to happen.
Yeah. And also, I think, at least in my experience with married couples, it's a little easier to cover up one's dementia because the other one can kind of smooth things over and just make it easier. And so the kids may not be aware how far gone one of the parents is.
I'm glad you mentioned that, because often that well spouse dies and then the kids call me and say, my mother is so confused, doesn't know anything. We had no clue. Dad didn't tell us what he was dealing with.
Right.
Mom was socially appropriate, which is very typical in dementias, and always loving and called us, but dad was doing the dialing. Obviously, she can't dial a phone now. And, you know, so it gets uncovered then.
Right. Yeah. That's what I've seen a number of times.
Yeah, and then they bring them in here to get the legal documents done a little too late.
A little too late, yeah. A little too late.
Yeah. So the transition is adult child stepping in, trying to do an intervention without taking over. And then it comes to usually bringing in care. You know, if you've never hired anybody, maybe you've had a housekeeper. That's helpful if somebody's had a housekeeper, because we could just extend the housekeeper's time. Caregiver.
You can use that terminology. Yes. And everybody's comfortable with that, but now it's going to be 4 hours every day.
Yeah, and if the person's very confused, they might not remember that, so that's okay. But most of the people in this transition, this is often the hardest part. I'm thinking of a client that I just recently seen that lives here locally, and her children are all out of the area. That's another challenge. Children don't live here. Elder parent is here. Mom obvious has memory loss. Mom talks about her memory loss. Mom's had some medical issues, had a number of falls. I see her put together a plan that respects her dignity, call it a personal secretary that she needs to help her with getting things done. She loves it. I talk to the children and they say, well, we're not going to pay. You have to have mom sign a contract for any services. And mom, who is financially quite well off. So the children say, and dad was a professional, a successful professional, so it sounds reasonable that I didn't see bank accounts or anything. But mother, I can't afford $500 a month. $500 a month. It's very,
very low.
Very low. And that's where I was starting with her. You start small and increase just to get her to trust and see the value of having somebody in her life. But the adult children are saying she has to make that decision. She's not. And the sad part of this story is she's going to have another fall and it's going to be more serious. And she's going to need a lot more than what I've originally suggested.
Right.
And it won't be as pleasant, you know, right. Because they want, and I understand that, they want to respect their mom's ability, but mom has a progressive dementia. She's in the early stages. She's aware of it.
Yeah.
So that's a hard part. These are hard struggles for families.
This resistance was the term you used earlier, getting the elder person to actually accept some help.
And it's about resistance and denial. And it's also about dignity. Think of yourself. If, you know, you have somebody that starts to take over some of the things you've always done, how do you feel about yourself? So that's, I guess, my background as being a family therapist is I'm always wanted to protect that. Even when I test somebody for dementia, if I'm doing a screening, which I'm licensed to do, and they start failing all the questions, I stop. There's no way I want to make that person feel bad about themselves. And I do my best to change the subject to something in the room, in their home, their children. So when I leave, they feel great about themselves.
Right. Not that they just answered 20 questions wrong in a row.
And the most confused person is realizing that when they're answering those questions.
Yeah. They know they're not hitting it.
And then another transition, Kirsten, is when you have to move mom or dad out of their home. That is, again, it's your, sometimes that was your childhood home and you don't want to do it. So you got to wonder whose resistance is it? Is it mom's resistance or is it my resistance as the daughter? And then mom moves into a care facility and then things go wrong there. And this is when we work with families for the whole journey and we're helping, of course, them choosing all these choices. Do they go to a small residential care license for six? Do we bring hospice in? Is it appropriate? You know, what do we do? And all of those decisions along this continuum of aging bring up feelings for people. They're really challenging. And I'm glad I'm here talking to you as an expert in legal because they have to look at their legal documents every year because I see legal documents for durable power of attorney or even the trust. Is the house in the trust? And they haven't put the house in the trust and they've had the trust for 20 years. And the durable power of attorney for healthcare or finances, the three people that are named on it either have dementia, died, or can't make decisions for them.
Right, yeah.
So I have to be making sure they're checking on that all the time on this journey. It's not just about the medical. It's about everything. Spirituality. Are they angry at God? Or do they need more spiritual connections? Maybe they've been angry at God a long time ago, and now they're towards the end of their life, and they're looking for a spiritual anchor, a rabbi, a priest, a pastor to talk with. So there's so much journey.
There is a lot to it. Well, you just were talking about a transition of moving parents out of their longtime home and possibly into a facility, but also I see this a lot with my clients. Sometimes parents get moved into a child's home. And talk to us about how that transition can go well or badly.
Yeah, and it can go well. I would say 50%, maybe it's higher than that. Probably 60 to 70% of the time, it really affects somebody's life negatively, either the adult children or the mom or the dad. And of course, those, I would like to say, don't have a geriatric care manager, Sherpa, guide, navigator with them, and they're trying to do it on their own, and they're not addressing things face on, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I have a good example of a family that wanted to move dad into their home, and I had a meeting with the whole family, the three adult children, the mom, the wife of the dad, so grandma, she was in the meeting as well. And I think the brother was on the phone. So I have all these people in a meeting and we're talking about the realities of bringing grandpa in the home. And the adult children, when I asked them, and they were not very old adult children, they were 18 and 20 in college locally, still living at home, saying, I'm worried about my mom. And the other one says, I'm worried about dad. He doesn't have a wife. My mother does nothing but worry about grandpa. daily. And the grandma says, if you move him out of this skilled nursing into your own home, I won't be able to visit him because there's no bus that takes me to your home.
House.
So you didn't look at the reality of it. So it wouldn't have worked. And they solved that themselves. But then other times, I had a family that actually lived across the street from me, and they had Munga move in and live with them for, it must have been 15 years.
And that
and
worked
it worked well.
Well.
Okay. She was mentally competent. They let her have her own life. They made sure she developed friends of her own because they moved her from out of state. That's important. If somebody's moved from a distance to move into your home, that you have a life separate from your children. If you want your daughter, who's an attorney working, 80 hours a week, to be there for you and answer every phone call, and she can't do it, her voice is going to get angry in response to you. Mom's going to feel bad. And that wasn't the purpose of wanting to do this.
Right, right.
So I do have a checklist about moms moving in. So if anybody ever wants it, we can...
Yeah, let's talk about that now. So this is something that Linda has made available to our listeners. We're going to have it on our website in the show notes for this episode. I'll start talking about it, and then Linda, you can maybe walk us a little bit through it. The title of this document is great. Mom is Moving In, The Rewards, Concerns, and Realities. So it's a checklist of things that one really needs to think about, ideally before we move mom into the house.
Before we move mom into the house. And I haven't done one for mom thinking about moving into your adult child's house, but maybe I will.
There you go.
Because I think I hear that from my older adults that I'm working with. Well, if I run out of money, I'll just move in with my kids.
Right. Well, have you thought about this?
Yeah.
So this is a checklist really for the adult children to consider.
Right.
What it's going to be like and what things they ought to be prepared for. What can you, Linda, talk about some of the more interesting things that people might not have thought about?
Well, one of the things I think that happens in families is all the kids are talking about what we're going to do about mom or dad, and they haven't talked to mom or dad about what they want.
Yeah, that would be a good place to start.
a really good place to start. So that's one of the things, that make sure you've talked to mom about other options. And daughter or son, you're well-meaning and you love this parent, but is this the best option for them? Where they live, can we find a geriatric care manager in Kansas City for you? So you could leave mom in that home maybe her parents lived in and now she lives in. And she has her church friends and she has her quilting club. And yes, she has a walker and her vision is failing, but what is the very best option for mom? Let's let an objective person help you make that decision, whether moving her out here to Orinda to live in your home, and you've just built this au pair unit on your home just perfectly for mom, but we haven't really talked to mom about what her life would be like. So again, it's exploring all the options.
Right, right.
With mom participating. When you've done that and you're going to make the move, it's more likely to succeed. And that mom then says, oh, then I could be at the kids' soccer games. I could see Susie's ballet. I can go to Joey's recitals. You know, that mom could be part of the lives of her grandchildren. Mom's engaged. Then it's going to succeed.
Mm-hmm.
And that you're going to have a life separate, that you can go out. You don't have to have a sitter for mom. Or if you do have a sitter for mom, you know you have to have a sitter for mom when you go into this.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it's not a surprise the first time you've got to go to an engagement.
You have date night every Friday night. You've been doing this for the last 20 years. Mom moves in and you're afraid to go out because she might fall, and you stop doing date night, one of the two of the couple is going to get resentful.
Right.
And then you have a marital problem.
Right. Yeah.
And I've worked with that many times.
And that's where your family therapist hat
that's where the
gets
family
pulled
yeah.
out.
Yeah.
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 It does. You can do all kinds of things for the family. Talking honestly about the financial issues, I think that's got to get out on the table, right?
Yes, because there is a cost to having another person
in the house.
And so mom's going to have to be contributing, whether it's just her Social Security or she has more assets than that. You find out what they are, and there is talked about honestly and openly. And again, the financial part gets a little sticky sometimes.
Sure. Yeah.
But we have to be realistic, and sometimes either with an elder law attorney talking about it with the mom or dad, or a financial planner or care manager doesn't doesn't matter that it's out in the open and that mom's going to contribute $1,500 a month for room and board. And she doesn't feel like then she's taking, she's contributing.
Yeah. She's part of the household. And
if mom doesn't have capacity, then the daughter has to run that by her brothers or sisters or other family members of how much they're going to
be taking. Are you going to pitch in?
Yeah.
That's a big concern in a lot of families, I think. It's going to largely fall on one of the kids in many cases, the oldest daughter.
The oldest daughter.
Is going to be the one most likely who will step in and start just doing things. The other kids may just kind of hang back, hoping that they dodge that bullet.
Well, if they're working with me, because I bring them all together.
Yeah.
I bring them all together, and I don't want oldest daughter to burn out and not have quality in her life. So I will usually try to give assignments to the other children. You could do mom's finances from a distance. You can talk to mom's medical providers because you're an MD or a nurse. Everybody has a role so that daughter who's local doesn't go up
and
smoke.
Do it all. Right. Yeah. Because that's not sustainable.
It's not.
To live two lives. One of the things I see on your checklist is I have had a trial run. I love that one. Talk about that a little bit.
Well, that mom's come out for a significant bit of time, say a month, and lived in your household, knows what it's like with the kids coming and going and their friends. Or maybe you're just a couple and you have friends and you go out and you travel weekends. You need to go away one of those weekends that mom's out in your home. So she knows what it's like to be alone in that house with those three pets that she has to take care of, or what her duties would be and what it feels like. So if you've done that and lived your life like you always live your life, and it worked for both parties, it's more likely to succeed. There's many little points on this checklist. We don't have time.
No, right. Exactly.
To look at them all. But if you really do this and check them all off and we've done it and it works, there's a good percent that you're going to be in that high percent of success of blending families. And if you do have that au pair unit, my cousin built that for my aunt and uncle. My aunt had severe rheumatoid arthritis. And, you know, she designed it for my aunt. The bathtub, everything was just for her
limitations. Yeah.
And it was connected to their home with a door, but they had their own living room, they had their bedroom, they had a bathroom, they had a little kitchenette. They didn't have to come in and be part of the family unless it was working.
Everybody
for both.
Wanted that.
And my cousin had four children, so it was a pretty active household at that time. And it really worked for their family.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. The care manager can help facilitate the conversations that have to happen.
Yes. Yes. We do that all the time. And it's so important to have these conversations with a neutral party. Geriatric care managers, I think, are great because we know all the resources when things aren't going well, or how do we integrate mom into the community? How do we get her connected to a new hairdresser, a new dentist? But socialization, social engagement, we all know now that that's more important than taking your medications correctly. They're saying that social engagement will add 5 years to your life if you're staying connected to people you love and things that you love.
That's fascinating. And that is important. If you're going to move to a brand new community, somebody's got to help you make those connections. Yeah.
And then again, the other thing I think that's not on my checklist that we need to think about, even when the move is positive, there's grief because you've given up something. Mm. There's something you've lost. Mm. And don't neglect talking that through. Talk about it. Let the person say it could be they miss their hairdresser or their dog walker or their next door neighbor that had a great crop of tomatoes every summer. And, you know, there are these little things that we miss that we don't realize we miss. Let that grieving happen. Don't point out, but mom, we have this wonderful farmer's market that you can get the greatest tomatoes. And that's true. And mom likes farmer's market, but she's missing Joe's over the fence tomatoes.
Right. The replacement doesn't negate the fact that she misses the old one. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's a legitimate feeling.
Yeah. And when we do that, we're denying the reality, I think, of the transition.
Yeah. Yeah. Good point. So I'm going to remind our listeners that this checklist, which is really, it's long. It's very long. Linda and I did not talk about not even half of it. And very helpful, full of things that you probably wouldn't have thought about on your own. Mom is moving in, the rewards, concerns, and realities. This is going to be available on our website on the podcast page in the show notes for this episode. So you can go there and read it for yourself. And thank you so much, Linda, for making that available. Can you give us an example of how a family having used a care manager could have saved money or time or both for the family?
Well, one of the things that has come up twice really recently is I had a gentleman sent to me from his physician because the physician remembered we helped at Elder Care Services, that we helped somebody find benefits that helped pay for assisted living. And the doctor said he's paying way too much. So the gentleman comes to see me and there are free placement agencies that are national franchised, advertised on television that help people find a place for mom or dad or husband or wife. And his wife was hospitalized and somebody gave him a name of one of these agencies. Again, it could be a discharge planner. I have no idea on the continuum of his journey who gave him the name of these people, but they took his wife and they placed her in a small residential care home for the tune of $8,000 a month, which is high for a small home.
Yeah, that's high for that.
He said the care is lovely. They take real good care of her. He loves it. And then I looked at his resources. He owns his place that he lives in, and it has a value of not a lot, maybe $600,000 at the highest. And his monthly income is pretty low, and his total assets are less than $100,000. And he's paying $8,000 a month, plus right. He has his own expenses. And what these people, the placement agency, didn't ask him, was he a veteran?
Oh.
That was $1,700 a month. Well, he's since applied for that. So one visit with me, he's got $1,700
right.
to pay for her care. But what's most important is she was in skilled nursing. And at that point, he was eligible for Medi-Cal to cover her cost 100%.
Oh, yeah.
And they took her out of that environment and put her into a barn care. So it's costing him $8,000 a month, and it would have cost him nothing if he was working with a care manager and
applied for Medi-Cal.
Yeah. So that was a big one. And he's making some other changes, and I've sent him out to look at other residential care homes that cost half that.
Yeah.
Good, that have a good reputation. And then another one is similar to that. A woman who didn't want to pay for a consultation with a care manager, again, put her husband in a small boarding care. And I saw the daughter 6 months after, and she said, yeah, Mom, put Dad in this place, and it's $3,500 a month, but Mom only has $60,000.
Ooh.
Dad was eligible for Medi-Cal also. Initially, but the placement agencies only get fees when they
place somebody.
Yes, in a place that gives a commission or whatever they call it.
Yeah.
So that's big. And then another daughter that came for a consultation. And number one, Dad and Mom lived out of state in assisted living. Daughter was also paying out of her savings for her own retirement. She was paying $1,000 a month towards their care in the other state. Dad was so frustrated about Mom's diagnosis and his inability to take care of her because he was kind of her caregiver in the assisted living that I got them to university hospitals across the country are great places to get a workup for dementia. I don't know exactly the ones. I don't have a relationship with the one in the state where her parents were, but we got Mom there. Mom got diagnosed with a different kind of dementia that had some medication that helped with her behavior. So even though it was long distance, that made the quality of Dad's and Mom's life better. She got the $1,700 also because he was a veteran.
Uh-huh.
And then she went back and told her financial planner, and he came over to our office and got a stack of our brochures because it was $1,000 less a month coming out of her account that he was managing.
Yeah.
So that was $12,000 more a year she had towards her retirement. And I also helped her get Dad the right telephone because seniors have a hard time sometimes with the cell phones. I have a hard time with my cell phone.
With how small the letters are and the
jitterbug bug phone that I recommended solved all her problems with her dad's cell phone thing. So with one consultation, she was able to get a lot of things covered and save some money at the same time.
I think that's a bargain. All those things you got
for 1 hour
of your time.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's fantastic. Yeah. That is a bargain. Yeah. And you don't get paid a fee or a commission when you recommend a facility. You don't. That's not how you operate.
No, it's not part of our integrity, but it's also the National Association of Geriatric Care Managers, called the Aging Life Care Association, has a code of ethics and a standard of practice. And we don't, and I can't because of my license here in California, set fees for any referrals.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's just what's in their best interest. That's what you're working toward.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. What's best for them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good.
However, I will say that I just recently made a referral to an assisted living, and if they had used one of those placement agencies, they would have had to pay the big fee. So they reduced my client's monthly rent by $200. That doesn't sound like much, but times 12 months, that was a good bonus back for them. And it's ongoing, you know.
Oh, for as long as they're there.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
So that's good to know, too.
More than paid for my consultation.
Yeah. Yeah. Because of the relationship and they know you and okay, this we're going to give we're going to give your client a discount.
Yeah.
One thing that I see all the time in my practice, and I'm guessing you do also, is that people are confused about what does Medicare pay for? What does Medi-Cal pay for? Who pays for hospice? All these kinds of things. And I'm guessing that a certain part of what you do is help them navigate that and understand it so that they're accessing what they should and can. Talk a little bit about those different entitlements and how they work together.
Right. I think so often people misunderstand that Medicare is going to pay for home care.
Oh, yeah, that's a very common misperception.
Yes. And it doesn't. If you are in a hospital for 3 covered days, you might get home health or you might go to skilled nursing and get some help, but it's not caregiving. It's a bath aide. It's a physical therapist. And it's short term. It's till you get to your optimal functioning level.
Right.
The very short term.
Yeah, the point is it's more directed toward rehabilitation so that you can go home. They can't send you home until you really can, but it's not long-term care.
Right. It's not long-term care. So that's really important. That's a myth that a lot of people think. And the other thing is if you are in an acute care hospital after a fall or an illness, you have to be there 3 days to qualify for that. And you have to be admitted. So you must ask if your family member or spouse, is my family member admitted or they are on observation status. You can be in a hospital for 3 or 4 days on observation status, then you do not qualify for skilled nursing or in-home care. So please ask those questions of the hospital when your family member is there. If you're thinking that, oh, this is great, mom's going to get in skilled nursing, she's going to be there for 2 weeks, we'll go meet with a geriatric care manager and our attorney and we'll get everything set up, and then from skilled nursing we'll move her to assisted living. It's our perfect opportunity, but they don't know.
They never admitted, or
mom,
they don't even know.
They're not going to get that benefit.
Right,
so it's
right.
not going to work the way they think about it working. That's a big one. And the other thing is people think, I just read this in an email one of my family members was sending to another family member that said, let's get dad on hospice. They'll cover everything. No, they don't cover 24/7 care.
Right, right.
And they provide much like home health, but a little bit more intense. You get a lot of one-on-one support. My client that fell and hit his head, he's probably going to go on to hospice. The next time he falls, we'll call hospice. They'll come out. They'll take care of the bump on the head, but he won't go to the ER. He's going to be on hospice.
Right.
And he's going to get their care to keep him comfortable and safe.
And hospice is about exactly what you said. It's about medical safety and comfort. It's not caregiving.
Not caregiving.
Right. You still possibly would need a caregiver.
Most often you need a caregiver if family can't do it. Then again, I think families don't know about things like the VA benefit, because that benefit is open to spouses. My dad served in World War II. My mom she just had just a little bit too much money. Had she had just a little bit less, like $10,000 less, she would have qualified for this $1,700 a month. But so widows of veterans are entitled to this benefit too, and a lot of people don't look into that. So
yeah, I think that's very, very common. It's a not well publicized benefit, which is not surprising.
Yeah, and then the other thing is the local things, like the villages, the La Mirinda Village, the Walnut Creek Village, the Clayton Village, and there are villages throughout the country that you pay anywhere from $50 to $70 a month to join. And they're grassroots senior-run villages, really sophisticated, actually, though. And they provide free rides, handymen, people that will come up over and maybe cook a meal just when you're not feeling so well. And that's all for your monthly fee. Those are volunteers.
Yeah.
So a lot of people don't know to take advantage of being part of a village and being part when you're well, not just when you need help.
Sure. Yeah. That's a great resource,
right?
The villages.
Yeah.
And we have one here in Walnut Creek, mm-hmm. and there's a La Mirinda, I believe. And isn't there one out in Clayton?
In Clayton.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So all you listeners out there in podcast land, check it out.
Yeah, please
do. That's a really good point. As you mentioned, I think it's a national organization or movement. So there are villages all over the country. And if mom lives in Kansas, you can access villages there that might be able to help her.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So thank you.
And now here's our Ask Kirsten segment, where Kirsten answers questions from you, our listeners. Question number one. Today, our question comes from Stephen in Walnut Creek. Stephen says, I'm actually a financial planner, and I have a question about one of my clients. He is an older gentleman who is disabled, living in his home, but paying caregivers to help him. In order to pay the caregivers, he's been taking distributions from his IRAs, which makes sense to me because his care expenses are tax deductible and will offset a lot of the extra income he is getting from his IRAs. Having said that, I'm really not sure if this is the overall best approach. Do you have any advice?
Of course I do. I never have nothing to say. Thank you, Stephen, for your question. There's a little bit of missing information. You didn't say whether he's married. You didn't say whether there's a concern about his future care needs such that he may end up in a nursing home. But what jumps out at me is it might be appropriate to think about that possibility for him, that perhaps someday, since, as you said, he has a disability, he might end up in a nursing home. We're always trying to look down the road. If we were only thinking about income taxes, I would say, yes, absolutely, your strategy is great. But if we are possibly thinking that this client might want to become eligible for Medi-Cal at some point in the future, a spend down strategy that empties out the IRAs but doesn't spend down the other assets might not be the best approach. So that's kind of all I can say right now based on the information I have, but I'd be happy to talk to you if you want to call us. Thanks very much for your question.
We love answering our listeners' questions here at Absolute Trust Talk. If you have a question you'd like to ask, just email it to info@absolutetrustcouncil.com. Thanks for listening.
Linda, this is the part of the episode where I shift a little bit and focus on my guest as a human being rather than as a professional. So I'm going to ask you, I know you told me about a very interesting trip that you took not too long ago. Why don't you share a little bit about that with us now?
Well, I had the opportunity to go to Africa.
Oh, yes.
On the bucket list of places to go, a once-in-a-lifetime trip. And we did a safari first, and I'll get to that. And then we did a mission trip via our church and via a trust called the Capnet Trust. But the safari, we were there for 10 days, and I don't think there's anything like it. I don't think there's any experience like being in the wild, and these animals seem to not even pay attention to these jeeps that you're in, and that you get to see them, the lion setting up for a hunt, and the ant lion, because the mom's doing all the hunting. So Auntie gets the cubs back and keeps them from disturbing the camouflage of their task at hand. To see a leopard carrying its baby from bush to bush, and the baby being bad and trying to run away, and the frustration of the animals with their little ones, and then to see the circle of life when something is dead or has been killed, all the other critters from the cheetahs and the birds and the hyenas, cleaning up the grounds. I mean, it is just amazing. The number of elephants, and my husband stood up on a boat when we were out in the Delta, and an elephant got mad and flipped its ears at us, and it was a little scary, but we just stood still and he didn't charge us. And we're here to talk about it. And we saw a wild dog hunt that was absolutely amazing. The chaos, they stir up all the dust and impede the zebras and the gazelles and the antelopes. So they can't really see as they're planning their attack. And it was just like, this is how the animals survive in their savannas. And it was just... And you're a witness to it. You're just right there on the front line. And the lodges we stayed in were very beautiful. We weren't really camping. And we didn't really... Oh, we did walk with the lions. There's a place in Victoria Falls that is trying to repopulate lions in Africa. The lion population has diminished over the years. So we actually walked and petted with these two 18-month-old lions. A lot of my friends think scary. And then we went and worked with children on our mission trip in Zimbabwe, which is a country that's having lots of problems. But the children have absolutely nothing where we were at. We were 3 hours out of the capital. We were working in a school, helping them build a schoolroom for preschool. There were like 400 children there, and the Kapnik Trust provides a porridge for them, and we helped feed the little ones up to 5 years old. And that might be the only meal these children get, some of them. And they've walked 4 miles to school in both directions to get there. The kids are so attentive. They don't even fuss. Of course, they have no cell phones in their pockets either. I mean, they don't complain about being squished on a bench or a log with 6 other kids. And then the lessons these teachers were teaching these children were in English, very sophisticated education they're getting out here in the middle of Africa where they have nothing, hardly any food. It was just, really? I mean, I was moving dirt and helping do construction as much as kind of interacting with the kids. Yeah. If you've never done that kind of volunteer work, find a time in your life to do it. That's all I have to say, because there is nothing else like that.
Yeah, helping people who need so much.
Yeah. And they are so joyful. They have no running water. They have no electricity. They have wells that sometimes don't work very well. Mm. And these people are happy. They are happy and appreciative. Joyful. Always joyful.
Yeah. Stuff doesn't necessarily make you happy.
No.
Things are not the route to happiness. That's very true. Thank you for sharing that with us.
That's
a great story. Linda, we're just about out of time, and I appreciate the time that you've given to me today. Are there some final little bits of advice that you'd like to make sure our listeners take away from our conversation?
If you're struggling with parent care or thinking about your own aging journey, I think it's really important to get to know a geriatric care manager, an aging life care expert, whichever you want to call us, so that the journey that you're going to take is full of life, that life doesn't end, that even if you have a diagnosis of anything that seems dire, you can still bring joy into your life and live all your life if you have good direction and navigation. And I think a care manager is the place to start. And you're going to need a good elder law team like your team to get through this journey. So don't be penny wise and pound foolish. Get good advice.
In the beginning. Right. Those are very, very good words of wisdom. Thank you for that. And thank you so much for being here today. I really, really enjoyed it.
Yeah, it's very much fun to talk about it.
Good. Thank you. Thank you so much for listening today. I really appreciate you being here, and I hope you enjoyed the show. I hope you learned something that is useful to you. If you like our podcast, be sure to go to iTunes and subscribe to our podcast. All you have to do if you're looking for the podcast, is type in the words Absolute Trust Talk in the search bar and our podcast will appear and you'll see a button that enables you to subscribe there. That helps us with our online visibility, our SEO, if you know what that means, and all those kinds of things that I don't really understand, but I am told is a good thing. So besides searching for us on iTunes, you can also find all of our previous episodes right on our website, which is absolutetrustcouncil.com. Just click on the podcast tab on our homepage and you will see all the topics and the information about all of our previous guests, and you can listen to them in order or in out of order, however you want. And the last thing I'm just going to say is make sure to catch our next episode, which will be out in about a month from now. I know you'll get a lot out of that one too. They're all excellent. So I look forward to connecting with you next time.
Thank you for listening to Absolute Trust Talk. If you loved this episode, head on over to iTunes to subscribe and leave us a review. Don't forget to visit our website, absolutetrustcouncil.com, where you can find a host of guidebooks and other tools to help you through the estate planning and estate administration process. If you need help securing your own legacy, then put your absolute trust in us. Give us a call at 925-943-2740 or email us at info@absolutetrustcouncil.com to set up your free consultation today.
This podcast is not meant to take place of legal advice from an attorney and does not create an attorney-client relationship. If you do have a legal question or issue, please consult with an attorney.